Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, August 1st, 2008. Started off with my old alma mater, the Moody Blues, who I used to tour with. Today we have on there a special guest, Cal Ore. And Cal was once a, as she says in her little bio here, a pigeonhole as a health and pet magazine journalist, spread her wings in 2004. A native Californian, she wrote a book, The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes. And she also has a lot of nice cats and pets. She's also written books, The Healing Powers of Vinegar, Revised and Updated, The Healing Powers of Olive Oil, and a whole lot of other stuff. And strangely enough, we set this show up 2 weeks ago, and she had predicted this earthquake we had 4 days ago, and I guess she nailed it pretty good. So you're pretty good yourself at predicting earthquakes. How's it going, Cal?
I'm starting to scare myself. Yeah, the more you do it, the better you get. It's it's been a good week. I have to tell you, I'm on a roll. You're not the first host that has told me that they're a bit surprised that my predictions came true. It's ironically, Jim Berkland, after I wrote the biography, The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes, he predicted that he saw a book, The Woman Who Predicts the Earthquakes, kind of like, I he taught me everything I know. He's my mentor. He's the man, but I'm intuitive, and I'm really sharpening those skills. And the more you do it, the better you get at it. I feel that all of us have intuition. We all have intuitive powers, but not all of us have the time or choose to work with it.
Yeah, you've got quite a, you're kind of like me, you know, you do a little everything, don't you? Do you play music, too?
Actually, I wanted to be a lyricist. I lived in Hollywood in my 20s for a couple years, and I so wanted to be a lyricist, but I didn't know how to write music. So, I just ended up being an author, writing creative nonfiction. And I really fell into this predicting earthquakes the past 4 years. After writing that book, I just went with the flow, and the more I do it, the more I do it. Started a website, Earthquake Epicenter, with a friend of mine, and it's growing. And
was that www.epicenter.com?
Uh-huh, Earthquake Epicenter.
Epicenter.com. I think I was on that earthquake the other day. On the earthquake, on that website the other day, checking it out. It's a pretty neat site.
Yeah, it's pretty busy. It's like a playground. There's so much there for you to do, and a lot of interesting people to talk with all around the world. We have somebody from Taiwan that predicts earthquakes there. He's really great. From the Midwest, you know, after they had the New Madrid Zone, awakened on April 18th with their 5.2. We have some people from, there. Southern California, definitely. Northern California, Reno, Tahoe. We're starting to get quakes again, just like I said. I said after the Southern California quake that we had, it would cause a trigger effect, which is very common. And I said that offshore Northern California would be next, and it was. We only had a 4.2 and a 3.5 the very next day. But the month...
You missed the one down here, what, by 19 miles or something?
No, what happens is when you had your 5.4, it was downgraded from the 5.8, sometimes that can trigger quakes all over California. Back in June 2005, I called it the June Jitters in the quake book. We had quakes in both Northern and Southern California and Tahoe Vista. It's just a trigger effect. And... a lot of conservative scientists believe in that. It's kind of like an analogy would be if you have, let's say, a bad tooth, that needs to have a root canal. Sometimes that can start a lot of problems. If the dentist gets into that one tooth, it can migrate to another tooth, and it can have transference pain.
I used to have that problem when I ate a lot of sugar.
Oh, yeah.
That was Mr. Root Canal.
Yeah, we could talk about that. I've got a remedy for that. But I think it's the same deal with the mouth. All the fault lines are kind of interlinked, and it stirs things up. So I predicted a trigger effect that after the Southern California quake, which was not on the San Andreas, and that is really a blessing, it was on a smaller fault. And so even though it was a moderate quake and you all felt it down there, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, you know, we're in Laguna Beach, and I've rode out earthquakes here since the 70s in this house. And we're on top of a volcano. The archaeologist at UCI told us what kind of volcano it was. We actually have a gold mine under the house. We found 3 ounces per ton, but the city won't let us mine it. But it's like when you're on this volcano, it kind of like rubberizes it. So it's kind of a rolling rubber back and forth. You know what I mean? Kind of an effect.
Right.
One time, though, we had that one earthquake, the one that took down the bridges up there at I-5 going to Bakersfield, and that was an up-and-down one. That was like jarring your teeth. It was up and down rather than side to side. Even here, it was an up and down. So I noticed they go back and forth or up and down, you know?
Yeah, they're all different. The last quake that I actually felt, you know, I'm all around fault lines here at Lake Tahoe. I live close to state line. I didn't know that 9 years ago when I moved up here. I thought it was earthquake free. Little did I know. I live a block away from the lake. Big mistake. If we get 6.5 or something stronger, that lake could cause a sage, like a tidal wave, that could slosh back and forth for hours and devastate part of the shoreline. Berkland said it could even come to my doorstep. I don't
like
that.
We just need to put a boat out front, a boat dock, then.
Well, you know, I'm a devout swimmer, and I swim about five...
Because you swim every day, right?
I do. I'm so addicted to it. Down at one of the resorts at State Line. I love it. Not in the lake. It's too cold. It's a really nice pool with a waterfall. It's keeps you healthy. I love it. Gets the endorphin high.
Oh, I know. I think swimming is great.
But what I was going to say, we did have, you know, we had that swarm. They call it the West Reno Nevada earthquake sequence. When the geologist, scientist, seismologist start, they give you a name as a sequence, you know you're in trouble, especially when they tag it with mysterious along with the offshore Oregon sequence. And they may be related, but that started 1 week after we had our 6.0 rare quake in Wells, Nevada. There's been so many tremors, thousands of them, in the Verdi-Mogul-Reno area. And I predicted that we were going to have at least a 5.0 that would be felt throughout the Sierra, and I would feel it, and it would make the media. Well, it certainly did on April 25th. And I 3 hours before, I literally prepared for that quake. I knew it was coming. We had fours the day before, which I did not feel. But that night, on the 25th, I was too tired from all the quake activity in the media to go to the store and get water. So I filled up all these plastic jugs of water. I vacuumed. How stupid is that? I vacuumed for Mr. Quake.
Oh, wow.
I got the dog leashes ready just in case there was a gas leak or something after the quake. I went to bed early. I was exhausted. And then at 11:42, I believe it hit. And it wasn't a long quake, but it was a sharp jolt. And it was enough to get me out of bed, and the windows rattled, and I called Mr. Berkland at midnight, and I said, I got my quake. And then to see that red square on the USGS map, right, you know, the map was going crazy because it was a strong quake, and at first they put it at Oroville, which is near a dam in Northern California, and then it moved to Laurelton, which is near Truckee, California.
Yeah,
and then,
I know where that is, coming up the hill to you.
Right, right, and then it moved on over closer to Reno to the Verdi area.
Yeah.
And that caused so many aftershocks, and it just baffled and excited the scientist, and I don't think we're through. It started up again today.
Really?
Yeah, but now remember, today is a special day. We have the solar eclipse. We have the new moon. On the 16th, we have a full moon. We have another semi-eclipse, and on the 30th, we have another moon. And the tides are, you know, roller coaster type tides for the next, you know.
Yeah, new moon, you got your high tide.
Yeah, for the next 3 or 4 days. So this is prime time, and it wouldn't shock me if we get another 5.0 or stronger in that region.
What about down here?
You know, I went ahead. I was going to leave it alone, and I talked to an LA talk show host the other day and said, you're safe, you're fine. But then I started analyzing it, and I did the old Libra flip-flop. I made a prediction on the site that there may be a twin quake in Palm Springs. Now, that's on the San Andreas fault line.
Right on it.
Like in 1986 when they had the 5.9, and I was in Catalina at the time, and I remember I went back home to the Bay Area and wrote about that for a national magazine. Again, go back to the teeth analogy, the big mouth, and all those fault lines down there. You know, there's been a lot of aftershocks. Nothing stronger than a 3.6 since your 5.4, but if you look at the map, you'll see that there's been some activity near Palm Springs. There was just a microquake before we started on the phone. It wouldn't surprise me this month if you get a moderate quake in Palm Springs. I'm not predicting a great quake. I'm not even predicting a 6.0.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it would not shock me if a 4 or 5.0 hits Palm Springs, and it would be
this was kind of an interesting earthquake down here because I have parrots, and usually they get a little crazy about a minute or so before the earthquake.
Right.
This time they didn't seem to get crazy till afterwards. They were sleeping on the switch or something. How about your cats? Were they going crazy at that time, or what was that?
That's the thing. Now, if your quake had been, let's say, hypothetically a 7.5, my two Brittany's and my cat, they're all seismically sensitive.
Right.
I would say there would be a good chance I would have picked up some signals, but since it was only a moderate quake, there's no way that my animals would pick that up. They're really good for the Bay Area, and they're excellent for Reno, Tahoe, Sierra.
Yeah.
They're great. Northern California, but you're 400 miles from me. That, and even a little bit more, that just wouldn't happen.
Yeah, and so I got to get my animals over to seismic school, get them trained better.
Well, friend, not all animals are seismically sensitive.
Yeah.
Just like not all humans are. They're just humans have very busy lives, and they might get some of the symptoms that I and other earthquake sensitives get, but they're going to tune it out. They might have a headache, which would be an earthquake headache, but they might just dismiss it and say, it's just a tension headache or whatever. They might get an ear tone and just blame it on tinnitus or just something weird. They might feel anxiety and just blame it on their boss. But people that are into this, they start picking up these signs, and then when they see, let's just say I feel anxious, that, and then Reno gets another quake, which has happened before, and then I see a pattern, and then that's how you link it together.
How long have you been sensitive or aware of your sensitivity to being the earthquake predicting?
Actually, I've been sensitive since I've been a kid. But, when I was a teenager, and I have a really vivid imagination, friends and my parents and my parents' neighbors, they would, criticize me for it and play it down.
Yeah.
So I didn't have, groups, like our website where people say, no, you're not crazy or overreacting. Yeah, you're on to something. You're sensing something. So I've always had heightened sensitivity. As far as pain, my pain would be stronger than other people's. I was thinking before I came on the show tonight that I think that people like me, super sensitive, they have heightened senses like animals. We're keen observers. We really tune into our environment, and we tune into our own body feelings and our natural instincts. I just got back from the vet with my dog, and I think the average person would not have taken the dog in that soon, but I just tuned into his body, his nose, and I knew something was wrong. It was inflamed a little bit, but again, I think the average person probably just would have waited it out for the weekend. I took it in, and he did indeed have a problem.
What was wrong with him?
They don't know. It's infected. The top of his nose, it's infected and it's inflamed. He had to have an antibiotic shot. He's on antibiotics.
Yeah.
They think it could be a puncture of something, but I don't know how that would have happened because
yeah.
He's not an outdoor dog. But and also when they weighed him, the girl weighed him and she said he weighed 33 pounds, and I said, no way, I know my dog. And I'm so in tune to this, I insist to be weigh in again, and I said, I know he weighs 37, and he did.
That's good.
It's like Also, I live near the casinos. I guess what I'm trying to say is that sensing things and being hypersensitive can be positive, too. I gamble a lot.
Oh, you do gamble?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
When I predict the earthquakes and I get hits, I'm on a roll. And then when I go swimming and I pass by the slot machines, the dollar ones, if I have a feeling with a machine or I have a feeling that I'm going to win, I would say my accuracy rate's probably 75%. I'm really good at it, and I know
how to stop. Slot machines, or you do a blackjack, or what do you
no,
do?
No, I don't like to mingle with the people. I like to do the dollar slot machines. I actually love Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah.
That's what I'm good at.
Now, over the last say couple of years, how have you won or lost in the big picture?
I've never won thousands and thousands like some of the tourists do, but I often walk away with $100, $200 at a time. So it's a nice little part-time job.
And yeah, do you ever walk away having lost, being $100 lighter?
Yeah, of course I've had misses, definitely, without a doubt. But I believe that I've won more than I've lost. In fact, I know I have, because it's the same thing with earthquake prediction. If you're not good at it, you're going to get bored and you won't do it. My brother, he doesn't win like I do. Before we moved up here and we'd come visit, he wouldn't win, and of course he got bored. I still love it because I win. The same thing with predicting earthquakes. If you keep striking out, why would you keep doing it? It would be boring.
Actually, well, you seem to have quite a reputation of being pretty accurate. I read a lot of the testimonials. There's a lot of people that claim to predict earthquakes. Most of them aren't very accurate, you know?
That's true.
That's 90% of them, I might say.
Yeah.
It's just so cool that you come on the show right after we had one, and when I booked you on the show about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had no clue that we were going to have an earthquake other than you mentioned something about it.
Well, yeah, on the site, I think on July 3rd, I made the prediction, and I said that it would be Palm Springs with a radius of 50 miles of Palm Springs, and definitely this quake was felt there.
Yeah.
167 people reported it to the USGS on their map, where they say, did you feel it, and you could type in what you felt and how strong it was. The intensity in Palm Springs was a 4. That's how strong it's felt. I read about a couple in Palm Springs on MSNBC.com. They saw their swimming pool splashing, you know, back and forth like a fish. I gave it a 50-mile radius, so I was 32 miles off, but it was felt in Palm Springs. And I didn't say I said the epicenter could be Palm Springs or near it with the 50-mile radius. So it was a pretty close hit, and I did say it would be a 5.0 to a 5.5. And I did say it would be in the month of July, and I gave my reason being of cycles because of the 1986 Palm Springs quake in July, on July 8th. And I just thought, it was time.
Yeah, so do you think we'll have it? So, you know, I'm not sure we'll have another one, like, say, in October or something down here?
Well, actually, my astrologer friend in Desert Hot Springs, now, she did not feel the quake you did, but she just gave me her forecast for August, and she thinks that more will happen in Southern California September and October.
Yeah, I could go along with that. We've had some shakers in October month, usually during a full or new moon, like you said earlier.
Yeah, when I read that, it sort of struck a chord with me, and of course, being in the Loma Prieta quake, the World Series quake, that was October 17th.
I remember that one.
But you guys, you do not need fires and big quakes both in October, because, you know, fire season lasts all the way through October for you down in Southern California, and you don't need a repeat of last year.
No, it's getting to be drier and drier because of the greenhouse layer changing and everything. So we're getting
right. It's
all the wetlands. We had wetlands all down through Huntington Beach, and they're all gone. And we just have a lake behind us where I live now. It's gone.
I know. Our lake receding this year as well. You know what's kind of strange is that the USGS, they're promoting a drill for you people down there on November 30th. They're calling it the Great Shakeout. And it's getting you all prepared for, you know, a major or great quake. Now, if they're having it November 30th, maybe that can make you rest easy. Why would they wait that long if they really thought that you were going to have a major quake tomorrow?
Yeah, what agency does that anyway?
I don't know. They just put a press release out on the USGS website. Just go there, and you still can register, actually, people living down there. it's going to be a really big drill. But I'm just wondering why they're waiting all the way to November 30th.
Yeah, they
kind
must
odd.
Have pretty good confidence. Now, I have a question for you. The man who predicts earthquakes, Jim Berkland, maverick geologist. Now, what's the deal with you and him? Is he a friend of yours, or how did you end up writing this?
Yeah, he's a great friend. We go way back when, 20 years. Back in 1986, when I was in college, I started, I started reading about him in the San Jose Mercury News. He was getting media coverage for his predictions, and he, counts lost dogs and pets in the missing pets ads. And I thought that was fascinating because I've always been an avid animal lover. And, you know, he looks at the lunar cycles and the tides, and it all made sense to me because I've always been, you know, nature girl. So I called him up, and I was really nervous the first time, and he was really type A like me, talked really fast, and I felt very intimidated. But I met him because I think I was writing an article or something for college on him, and I met him. He was a Santa Clara County geologist, and I met him down at Santa Clara County for the first time. And then after college, I started writing articles for national magazines, pet magazines, and I would always write it about him and his predictions in animals. And during that time, he would tell me about humans, you know, predicting them. Not like him, but earthquake sensitives. But I always tuned it out because my focus was on animals, not humans. So I really didn't pay attention to that until after the World Series earthquake, when I had the earthquake headache. You know, I had an intense headache and went to bed before 5:04 that day. And I realized 3 out of 4 of my animals at the time, they sensed the oncoming quake a week prior. And I was sensing it myself. And then just bringing it up to 2004, when I started writing the book, The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes, I interviewed a lot of earthquake sensitives. And I realized that what they were doing, I could do it too. And I just started practicing, and that's
how.
And
that was based on your headache, or just some other thing?
Oh no, so much more. It's not just the headache; it's the ear tones. I interviewed this gal that has a great track record for ear tones, and it's
now,
really
the ear tones. What do you mean? You get a tinnitus-like reaction in your ear, but it's not a tinnitus thing, and it comes and goes?
Exactly.
Okay.
And what happens, it's like an orgasm. I mean, it's really an incredible feeling, especially when you link it to that you can predict a quake from it. You could just be sitting anywhere. It could happen anywhere, and all of a sudden, for me, my ear, usually left ear tones for the most part, it'll, like, plug up. And then all of a sudden I'll get a really distinct tone, or I'll get a really faint tone. And the distinct tone is usually good for San Francisco Bay Area. The faint tone is good for offshore Northern California. And the long, long tone is good for Japan.
Real interesting.
Well, the track record for that is probably mine. Accuracy is 75% at least.
That's very good. Anything over, I'd say, 60% is phenomenal.
Yeah, I had a wager with Berkland a year ago for a 5.0 in California. He chose Southern, I chose Northern, and I won off an ear tone, the left ear tone, a 5.2.
How far before the earthquake happened did the
ear? My ear tones are usually good for a 3-day window.
Yeah.
Sometimes I've extended it for a week.
Now, how do you know a date after you get the ear tone? Because the earthquake follows right after that, or what?
Right, within right after it happens, usually within 3 days, my girlfriend, the founder of Earthquake Epicenter, Kim Barrow, she thinks that I usually, for me, it comes in within 3 days, but it has gone as long as a week. After that, my ear tones, forget it. I don't think they're useless.
Yeah.
So I've never drawn those out. So there's their ear tones. My dreams, I've gotten accurate hits from those. For those are good. Let's see, in the book I wrote about a dream I had in Wyoming and Montana. I have no connection with those states whatsoever, and I find it really eerie how I had this dream where the dogs were barking, and then it made the news that the dogs were barking, and sure enough, there was a quake, I think it was in Wyoming, and it made the news there, and it was the dogs the people were talking about in the introduction paragraph. and that was from a dream. I find that extremely uncanny.
Interesting.
And then I get visions and images, and that's when I'm swimming. When I swim infinite laps, I guess it puts me in a very relaxed, you know, a relaxed state where, you know, it really clears your head. When you swim laps, it's probably like yoga, and then all of a sudden, it's not like I want it. I'll get an intrusive image of a place. Or an image of water, like offshore Northern California, or an image, like this morning, I think it was, or yesterday, I got the image that Palm Springs, the word image, Palm Springs 5.0. It's just, it's really bizarre. And again, it's not like I want this. It just intrudes in my life. So it's better to go with it than to, you know, freak out.
In your book, you call that the dog ear. Is that what you mean by that?
What do you mean?
But you got, you call this dog ear in this book, The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes.
Oh, that's just being clever. You know, when you have a book and you dog ear it, you dog ear
it. Oh, okay,
I
got it. All right, I got it.
That was just a play on words, dogs and cats, because Berkeley, you know, uses the dogs and cats. Because dogs and cats will get disoriented and they will flee often before a quake happens. You know, like the China quake, the recent China quake, what was it, May 12th?
Yeah.
And the mass exodus of the frogs and the toads, and they fled on the bridge, you know, a couple days before. In movies, you always see the birds, you know, like in The Day After Tomorrow, the really cool scene where all the birds just flock away, you know, before I think the big tidal wave comes. Animals are so sensitive. Go back to 2004, the tsunami quake.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. The tsunami quake. Do you think that was an explosion, or do you think that was a natural thing that occurred out on the ocean?
It's funny you say that, because we have been playing with, you know, man-made disasters a lot, the idea. I never thought of that as man-made. No, no. That's a very seismically active area, and other scientists believe that it was going to happen, and I think I talk about Dr. Kerry C., that Say, S-E-I-H, who knew that it was coming. He actually went there and passed out over 5,000 flyers telling people that a tsunami was going to happen and an underwater quake. So, no.
How far before that actually occurred, did this event happen?
I think
anyway?
It was a couple months.
It's he was pretty close then. So
yeah,
he was
He was really on target, but nobody listened to him. That's really sad. And, you know, the animal...
I thought Noah was crazy, too, you know.
I know. You know, nobody knows if the animals sense the oncoming underwater quake, you know, before. And the conservative scientists will tell you that they did sense the tsunami, the vibration of the ground, the tsunami, and that's why they ran, you know, for higher ground, and the people did not. It's really sad because, 300,000 people died, and so many animals lived. Of course, you know, some animals did die. You know, there is a lot of feral dogs, wild dogs on the beaches, and I have anecdotes in the book talking about how, you know, no more dogs were seen. So not all the dogs survived. Not all the animals survived, but a lot more animals did than the people did.
Yeah. You know, now, down here in Southern California, I live in Laguna Beach, but I always chose to live up on a mountain. I'm 1,000 feet high. I can look out way out over the ocean even now. I never chose to live down by the ocean. I always figured that someday here in this town we would have some pretty high waves coming in, you know, more or less a 100-foot caliber or something from some offshore earthquake.
You know, I can relate to that. I fantasize about moving all the time. I've been in Tahoe for nine years, and I love Tahoe a lot, but...
It's beautiful up there.
I'm sorry?
It's beautiful up there. I love it up there, too.
It is beautiful, but life's short, and there's so many other places to go to, and I've been toying with Seattle, and I would love to live up, you know, by Eureka on the coast, but
That's pretty up there.
It is, but then, you know, they actually have the sirens, you know, the tsunami sirens, and I don't know. Even though I'm a good swimmer, I don't know if I could handle that.
How far do you swim every day?
How far do I swim?
Huh?
I swim about a half an hour, just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
Well, you go across, you don't swim clear across the lake, do you?
No, I don't swim in the lake. I swim in a big pool.
Oh, a big pool.
Yeah, the lake is too cold up here. You know, some of the tourists in the summer, the hottest months in July and August, they swim in the shallow part. But, no, I'd rather swim in a pool.
Now, let's shift over here to some other, let's go over to the next, one of my next favorite topics. We've done a half an hour on earthquake. I want to talk about your other book here because, you know, I'm very much a vinegar freak. I love the Modena 10-year-old and older vinegars, which you can use on dessert. Of course, we sell those, and I guess you have some too. And so I want to talk about your really cool book, The Healing Powers of Vinegar. How in the heck did you? This is probably what you did before the earthquakes, right? You were into the nutritional side of life.
It is. Back in 1999, Kensington, my publisher, they had an editorial consultant. He's since passed, but he gave me a choice of writing about vinegar or ghostwriting for a cardiologist, and I chose vinegar, and he had a spin. He wanted me to write something different about red wine vinegar because he believed that it had the compound resveratrol, which is found in red wine, which is an antioxidant and
right.
It's heart healthy. Now, I did the research on that, and I had some scientists do the research on it to see if it really was true, and they found that there were traces of the compound in red wine vinegar, but not as much as red wine. So the editorial consultant, he was onto something, but not really where I could be honest and take it to there. So what I did, I delved into the Mediterranean diet, which turns out to be timeless, and 10 years later almost, it's still, you see studies every month that the Mediterranean diet is the key to staying healthy. It's for heart health, for staving off diabetes too, for keeping trim, lean. It's how I eat. It's really a healthy way of eating, and basically the Mediterranean diet, it's fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, whole grains, fish, very little meat, very little sweets, pasta, some pasta, you know, whole grain, olive oil, and of course vinegar. And your main fat would be olive oil. And so for salad dressings, you would use, you know, olive oil and vinegar. You wouldn't use the high fat, trans fat filled, you know, salad dressings.
Right, exactly. Vinegar and oil is one of my favorites.
Right. Well, then you're ahead of the game there.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I like ranch. But I know ranch is full of fat, you know, so I try to moderate that.
It's an acquired taste.
Yeah, you know, from eating meat when I was younger, I've been a strict vegetarian now for a number of years, but I mean, in the younger days, I liked hamburgers, and it took a long time to get rid of that craving for that, you know, rancid oil meat stuff, you know
what
I mean?
It's an acquired taste, you know, being a baby boomer, my mother, you know, I grew up on meat and potatoes, and I became a vegan as well when I was a teenager, and of course she was unhappy about that because she loved to cook, and I just, you know, went the hippie route. But it turns out that you and I are on the right track. Eating a lot of meat is not good for you. Fish is
so full of steroids and hormones.
Right. Fish, I will eat fish on occasion for the omega fatty acids that you really need for the hair and the skin.
Right.
I don't like fish, but I do it just for the health part, but I really don't like it.
Now, do you have a preference in vinegars? I mean, I like the old aged ones. Are you into the old aged vinegar?
Actually, for the vinegar,
older?
The red wine vinegar, just natural vinegar, is good. And in cooking, I don't cook that much because I usually eat fresh foods, but it's, you know, just red wine vinegar, organic, natural. For apple cider vinegar, personally, I do not take it. Internally, it's too acidic for me.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, it's not. There are so many seniors that vow that by it, they take a tablespoon or two daily, or even Fergie, the celebrity that has that mean, lean body, and I have her on my website, she takes a vinegar shot every day, and she insists, I guess, that it burns fat, which I discuss in the book because of the acetic acid.
Yeah.
So it's apple cider vinegar if you want to lose weight. It's red wine vinegar if you want the antioxidants to stay heart healthy. What other? And white vinegar, a lot of people have written me. I have this thing on my site, calorie.com, Ask the Vinegar Lady. anybody can email me a question, and I'll answer it for them. And if I don't know the answer, I'll find it for them. But somebody asked me the other day, can they use white distilled vinegar to lose weight and get all those, you know, health perks? And no, that white vinegar, distilled vinegar, that is really for house cleaning. That's to clean your coffee pot, your microwave, and windows.
Not to drink.
No, no. It's the apple cider vinegar.
Yeah, it's interesting. You've got some pretty neat charts in here, like acid reflux disease, apple cider vinegar.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Okay.
You got several tables in here of three, four pages here.
I know. I'm very excited because this is going to turn into a trilogy. Guess what the next book is? Are you ready? The Healing Powers of What? Can you guess?
Wait a minute. Hang on. We got vinegar. We got oil. I don't know. Wine?
No. I am including wine in it. But guess what the main focus will be? I think you can get it. Guess one more time.
Let's see here.
It's something really great. It's recession-proof. Everybody loves it.
I don't know. I think I'm at a...
Come on. It's going to help you get rid of your sweet tooth.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good one for me. I can handle... You can put any alcohol or anything around me, I can handle it. You get me around chocolate, I'm out of control. I cannot have it in this house.
Okay, Fred, it's dark chocolate.
Dark chocolate, yeah.
Now, when you eat dark chocolate, do you see, that should suppress your sweet cravings.
Yeah, it's bitter, though.
It is, and it's an acquired taste, but ever since I started eating it, I no longer crave any ice cream, cookies, any type of candy, nothing. It's dark chocolate every day. There's so many studies that show that it can lower your blood pressure. It can lower your cholesterol levels. It can help you lose weight. It's amazing, and that will be my next book, and it'll be a trilogy. I am so excited.
Where do you get the dark chocolate from, anyway?
Oh, there's so many places you can get. Actually,
no sugar in it, right?
Huh?
Bitter, right?
The less sugar. You want it bitter, like 70% from the cocoa bean. I'm going to be doing research down in San Francisco, like Ghirardelli, where they have really dynamite chocolate, and they're very well known. San Francisco has a lot of chocolate places where they...
Yeah, one guy, David Wolf, I know fairly well. We've done some seminars together. He's a raw food person, and he sells some pretty bitter, nasty-tasting dark chocolate beans or something. I've had a few of them. You kind of acquire a taste for them, like you say.
It is. I guess I've never drank, but I guess it's like wine, and it's like vinegar. You just, years ago, in my teens, I started eating yogurt, and I did not like it at first. It was gross, but now
I never liked yogurt.
You do or you don't?
I don't. I can take it, but I mean, I never was a yogurt person.
It's healthy for you, but you said you're a strict vegetarian.
Yeah, I'm vegetarian. I haven't had any fish or anything in years.
Do you eat eggs? Are you a lactose?
Yeah, I do. I eat some eggs.
Right, right.
That's just one or two a week at the most. Sometimes none for months.
Right.
And a little bit of cheese occasionally, because I'm always, in my age, I'm always fighting the weight thing. You know, I do the saunas, and I exercise every day, and like you swim, that keeps you in shape. I definitely have to do the exercise. I never found just not eating to lose much weight. You got to do a little something with it. But then I found that if you're exercising really well and you're putting fat in your body, that doesn't seem to work very well either,
Another thing, I used to be the nutritionist columnist for, not a nutritionist, but I did the nutrition diet column for Women's World magazine, where I had to do an article every week for, a couple years. And I always had to come up with a weight loss diet because everybody wanted to lose weight.
Yeah.
And the thing is, what I've learned is, and this goes with the Mediterranean diet and why there's a book out, something about French women don't get fat. It's the concept where you should eat many meals. You shouldn't eat three.
Yeah, little meals, exactly.
Yeah, it keeps the metabolism, your fat burning power stoked throughout the day. So like five mini meals or five or six a day rather than eating three big meals, that will definitely help keep your weight in check.
You know, the funny thing about like when I went to France one time, I sat there across from a couple girls and they had a cigarette ashtray. By the time they left, they were both chain smokers. That cigarette pile was 6 inches above the top of the ashtray. It's amazing how they can do all that smoking and still live so long. Because I guess because it's a diet, it kills whatever pills you and tobacco, it seems to cancel it out somehow.
Right.
You think about that?
Right. You're right. I guess they do smoke there, the French, but I know that the lifespan, and I just looked at it recently in France and Spain, it's a lot longer than it is in America because we eat so many processed foods.
Yeah. And you don't see that in Europe. You're right. I remember when I was living over there, you go into a store, even to a deli, you don't see all that crappy cheese, the yellow cheese and all the stuff that you see over here. It just doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's more of a fresh food thing, and they really savor the food. I just read this this press release right before I got on the phone with you about the French women and the French paradox, and how these people were at a birthday party over there, and they were given a very small amount of espresso and a little pastry. I mean, a really tiny, tiny pastry. And the adults went to go back for seconds, and it wasn't allowed. That was a done deal. You're done.
That's funny.
So
over there, you know how the restaurants, you know, some of them have breakfast, and then they have lunch. There's no mid-afternoon. There's nothing until dinner. You know, I mean, they literally cut the restaurants shut down, all of them. Even at the equivalent of Denny's over there shuts down during the day. I mean, they're real strict about mealtime. I noticed that.
Well, also, after 7 o'clock, I was told by a European person and, a fitness expert, the people that help you to exercise.
Personal trainer?
Yeah. I interviewed him, and he talked about the European lifestyle, and he believes you don't eat after 7 o'clock.
I believe that.
Yeah, if you do. Now, some people will get a little bit hungry. Just have a piece of fresh fruit.
Yeah, that's very wise.
Right. Or
the Tibetans, I studied a lot of Eastern, they quit around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You're done.
Yeah, you get used to it. A lot of people think it's difficult, but I don't know. I read somewhere, someplace, that whatever you do, if you do it for 30 days, it can become a habit.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I know one thing. If I don't eat late in the afternoon and just stop, my energy is much higher. I can go all half the night, you know. Otherwise, if I eat a big meal around 7, 8 o'clock, I'm going to crash in a little while. Sleep a lot more.
Yeah, it can make you feel sluggish. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
So now, then you got your other book here. Olive oil. Do you have any particular the healing powers of olive oil? Do you have any particular? Now, this is a big thing with me with the olive oil. The vinegar, I've already said I like the balsamic of Modena taste, you know. With olive oil, you can get some really crappy tasting stuff out there. You know, I got to be careful with that one. I'm still looking for a good olive oil.
I have a great resource list in the back of the book of the people that actually make it. They produce it. Where you get it, you know, it's all natural. It's not from the grocery store. I'm not saying the grocery store doesn't have some good brands. They do. Like Spectrum is a good brand. But Shabika, I've done radio with him a lot. Shabika Shabika, it's Italian,
right.
100% Italian, and they make it. And it just has more antioxidants in it, and you want to make sure. The more bitter the olive oil is, the better it is for you. It's like the chocolate; it's an acquired taste.
Okay, hold on 1 second. I think we have a caller on the line here. Is there a caller there?
Yes. Hi, Fred. This is Jim from Florida.
Yeah. Hi.
I just had a quick question. I tuned in late. Can I get your opinion? What do you think of the HHO gas for cars, Brown's gas? What is your opinion on that from Stanley Meyer's work?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, Fred.
What is it again?
I just want to get your quick opinion on what you think of the HHO gas or Brown's gas they're using to try to improve the gas mileage for cars.
I'm not too familiar with it. All I know is that the hydrogen injection equipment is probably a little bit better than that. You know, I'm not too familiar with the brown gas.
Okay.
Maybe I know olive oil. We can run a car on olive oil.
Or hemp oil, right?
Yeah.
I study oils myself, and one of the best oils for cooking is coconut oil, extra virgin coconut oil. That can take the heat very well. And hemp oil is very good, but you don't want it. You just want to put it on salads and not heat it up. So that's interesting to know about the oils and stuff, because everything is so hydrogenated now. It's just so bad for you now.
Now, what do you think of, Cal? What do you think of coconut oil?
I do mention it in the book, but I know that you don't want to do a lot of it because it's really high, I believe, in saturated fat. Actually, they've just banned trans fats in California, which I think is really cool, and Starbucks had to go through some changes, too.
Wow.
What I did learn in the olive oil book, I thought that the heating, that you couldn't cook with it because of the heating factor, but I did learn that you could actually bake with olive oil. Gemma Shabika, she's wonderful, and she's the mom of Nick Shabika, who makes the olive oil, one of the people that I write about. And they've been in the business for years. It's a family business. And she has cookbooks out where she bakes only with olive oil. And I think that's outrageous because it can make sweets a lot healthier for you. She made me some dynamite biscotti. It was dark chocolate and olive oil. So you can actually make baked goods more healthy, you know, in moderation. I'm not saying, you know, go pig out on sweets, but if you're going to eat sweets, make sure that they're premium and good ones. And you'll get the antioxidants both from the chocolate and the olive oil.
Yeah, I also noticed you got in home cures, reducing hair loss is one of the things you mentioned in the...
Oh, into the home cures. What did I say about that? Now, was I really that serious? Because I'm a pretty honest journalist. You know, you'll read some of these books and they think that olive oil, you know, they'll tell you if you take a tablespoon a day, you're going to be healthy, skinny, live forever. And it's not just that. You know, again, it goes back to the whole Mediterranean diet and lifestyle. It's the whole package. And I just feel that my books have that integrity in there. So what did I say about hair loss, that you're going
to
have great hair?
I'm trying to find it in here. I lost it.
I'm going to try and find it.
On the back cover, that's for sure.
Where is it? I'm in the...
Also in your, if it's in your other table here. What about hemp oil now? I mean, that was the big product at the turn of the century for America before they made it illegal in the early 30s.
You know, I've never even heard of that. What is that from, like, marijuana?
No, it's from a hemp plant, and they use it for oil and lamps, which you also mentioned for olive oil. I know olive oil's been used for lamps.
Yeah, you can do that. I tried that. They actually sent me the lamp. Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, it's better than candles, actually.
Yeah, it's a lot cleaner burning, too.
Right.
Yeah.
I just read something about incense is unhealthy for you if you let it burn a couple hours, and I read that scented candles can be unhealthy, too. I had no clue.
Yeah, they got a lot of chemicals in them, a lot of incense. Like, there's a couple basic incenses that we use, and they don't have anything in them. The rest of them, I used to use a lot of different ones. I just quit and went to one now because... A lot of them are full of chemicals and stuff.
I'm looking at the home cures. Now, one that I believe in, have you ever heard of fibromyalgia?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. My doctor, general practitioner, doesn't believe I have it because I don't have enough of the tender points.
Yeah.
But I do overexert myself. I have two Britneys that I allow to pull me, which I shouldn't after paying for a dog trainer.
Yeah.
But they have so much energy, and I allow them, you know, when I'm walking them, they're running me. And so, you know, it kind of hurts the upper chest muscles, you know, underneath the clavicle.
Yeah, that's usually the immune system. The lymphatic system is getting overloaded a little bit.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
You know, when I had my annual yesterday...
People think that is a heart problem, but it's not. It's just an overloaded lymphatic system.
Exactly. When I had an annual checkup yesterday, and I asked my doctor, and he listened to my heartbeat and took my blood pressure, and that was all good. And he didn't think anything of that. It was totally muscle, because I said when I swim, there's no pain. When I do the hot tub, there's no pain. When I put ice on it, so it's muscles.
Yeah, and you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think, you know, because I had some friends that were in the Olympic swimming, and I think that's probably one of the healthiest, if not the healthiest exercise there is.
Because
it pretty much use all your muscles at one point or another, don't you?
Right. Although the only thing it's not weight-bearing. So if you know...
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem. I've gotten muscles on my arms and my back from swimming, like from the breaststroke, definitely. But I bet I would have more muscle mass if I lifted weights, free weights for the arms. And which is good, because both men and women can get osteoporosis, bone loss, you know, and age-related disease.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say about the...
We're not quite out of time yet, but we're close. We're down to the last 8 minutes or so.
Okay.
Give out your websites, would you?
Okay.
Got a bunch of them.
Okay, it's www.cal, C-A-L, like California, Ori, O-R-E-Y, earthlifeenergy.com.
That's your main website, cataglory.com.
Yeah. And right there on the homepage, you'll see the earthquake epicenter. You can just go on the link over there.
And you've got, and I know of the books that your publisher sent, I've been finding, everybody's been grabbing them around here. We've got The Healing Powers of Vinegar, The Healing Powers of Olive Oil, and Man Who Predicts Earthquakes. And I know you've sold quite a number of these books, because I looked it up, and you sell a lot of books. Have you got any other books up, or is the next book?
Doctor's Orders is still a really good book.
Okay.
What 101 Doctors Do to Stay Healthy. That was translated in 3 languages, 3 countries. That if you want to know about anything, you know, from head to toe, that's really a fascinating book. 202 Pets Peeves, that's kind of cool too. I channeled into my dog and cat, and they told us 202 things what they hate about their owners, what we do to them.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
It is. It's witty and it's fun and it's informative. And the chocolate book, I'm really excited about that, and that'll probably be out at the end of next year. And, I'm finishing up Supersensitive. The book cover of that is beautiful. It's on Earthquake Epicenter, the homepage. It's done by international painter Michael Liu, who's so talented. I have all of his artwork in my home. It's surreal. It's of this beautiful woman, and she's dancing with her cat, an oversized cat with a full moon in the background and a lake. It's gorgeous. And
you have a cat named Kerouac, don't forget.
That's true, my black cat, my seismically sensitive cat.
I love that. He was a great influence on my life when I was very young.
Really?
Yeah, the original hippie.
Well, actually, he was in the beatnik era, wasn't he?
Yeah. I used to go over to, when I was a kid, I never met him, but he'd go to these beatnik places down in Hermosa Beach. And I'd be in there, and he hung out with a few of them. I never saw him. People were up there saying their poems and just really crazy stuff, you know, way back in the late 50s, early 60s. I was just a kid, but, I mean, I was just fascinated.
Do you think those days were more fun than they are now?
What?
In the 60s and 70s?
You know what happened is, my feeling, because I hung out with a lot of people that became well-known and popular later on, and then I seen a lot of people copy them. I really had the most fun. I have a lot of fun now, but I find society is pretty much asleep and dead now. Back in those days, people were alive, kind of like Europe, you know, was 10 years. I hear Europe, they're falling asleep and not driving too well either, but back in those days, everybody was alive. We had a higher oxygen content in the air. People were just alive and more chipper than they are today and happier and better attitudes. I like that for that reason. I'd rather be back there, yeah.
I don't know. I see a correlation of change. You know, in the 60s when kind of a lot of the Cold Wars and the threat of war and revolution, and I just see a lot of change coming in the coming months, you know, with the new president, with Iran, with the global warming, a lot of earthquakes happening in unusual places. I just see a lot of change.
Yeah, no, I agree. The nature of life is change, and we're evolving, and, you know, it's a lot different than it was 200 years ago. There's a lot more souls incarnated now. And
right.
So I really think that it's very important to pay attention to the things that you're writing about, especially the vinegar and the olive oil and the chocolate, because I think that what we put in our bodies is what we become after a while, and I think we really need these olive oil, all these kinds of things to build our immune system to fight off all these stupid man-made viruses and all the other junk that's floating out there and the things they throw at us every day.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree totally. It's all related to nature. Again, it just goes back. I see there's the underlying theme in all my books that, you know, it's nature-oriented, and it keeps you healthy, mind, body, and spirit.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, because you practice that, you've been into health nutrition for a long time, obviously, that's probably honed your skills at doing your... Like,
right. I write what I know and believe. It just makes it honest, because since I was, you know, a teenager.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There you go. Well, I guess we're kind of like out of time, you know.
Well, it's been really fun talking to you.
I know you're busy. You do a lot of radio shows, don't you?
I have been. It's a nice medium. You know, before I was doing a lot of Barnes & Noble book signings, and that takes a lot of energy, and I started taking my 2 Britneys. And that takes more energy, but this is a nice medium. I'll probably be going on a book tour, though, in the fall.
When's the chocolate book coming out?
Probably next year. I'll probably deliver it by January. I want to have a couple months to do some fun research and stock the pantry with dark chocolate. And then the writing part's easy. It's the research that takes time.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, I look forward to the chocolate button, and I'll let everybody know that we also here at Paradigm, I always pick the best books for our bookstore. We're starting a bookstore on our side, which is very large.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got your featuring books. We haven't got pictures of them, but we'll be carrying your books, all of them probably.
Great.
So, I mean, they can go through Amazon and whatever, but we'll have them here. So cause people, sometimes they'll place an order and they want to add things so we can add books, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be some kind of fun.
Okay. Sounds good.
Anyway, you've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Our guest today on August 1st has been the earthquake predicting lady and many other things too. And of course she nailed our earthquake down here, which we had a few days ago. So anyhow, with that, that's the final hours of Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Until next week, we'll talk to you then. Bye.